woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howard. Crowder on the board. SP Futures up 30. NASDAQ is up 162, doing the bounce from yesterday's pretty serious down day, but we are bouncing this morning. Don't know actually why we went down or why we're bouncing, but we're doing both. Yesterday is a way of review, nasty review. Dow was down 177, but the S&Ps were down 50 and NASDAQ down 299, so it's almost 2%. It was a bad day for the NASDAQ. A lot of that was Microsoft getting whacked pretty good. Now it's bouncing back today, $3. So right now everything's in bounce, buy the dip mode, buy the dip. Do we have Mr. Kevin? We're not buying any dip over there. What's all going on?
Like, but speaking of dips.
Speaking of dips, here's Kevin.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Ricardo. How you guys doing this fine Friday?
Morning.
We're doing good. We're still seeing the squad cars protecting the dignitary-only open piece of the Kennedy, which is refreshing. But at least I know now there are state policemen. I thought they all disappeared there for a while, except for picking up shells on people they never caught. Just saying, Kevin. They're around.
One of the things, speaking of the policemen and the convention... we were talking the other day about the suites at the United Center. Turns out the suites for the convention started at about $500,000 to get one, and you have all kinds of big donors, media, the major media outlets got their own suites. Now, how is that? Is that not a media donation?
One would think
when they pay $500,000 or more for a suite there.
Yeah. I don't know how that works. If you pay the $500,000 to get your people in the place and the badges, and then they flip you to suite, or there must be something that comes with it. I mean, you wouldn't have just a few media moguls hanging in the skybox without their people being able to go around and interview people and stuff. I mean. Wonder how that all works.
Yeah, they'll send their people down to the floor, but when you need to come up and get something to eat and have a lovely beverage and all of that kind of stuff, I'm sure that their main anchors will spend some time there, as well as the heads of the network and just all the major people involved.
What do we used to call them in school? The poobahs.
The poobahs, the grand poobahs.
Yeah. Now, if we had,
but enough about that, because the whole thing was silly, as conventions have become. But there are a couple of kind of interesting sports notes that we should hit before we.
Hey, I got a question for the either convention. They used to actually spend a couple of days on a platform and publish it. Does anybody do that anymore?
Well, the Republicans published their platform before the convention, and then they approved, and then got it approved. I don't know, because I have no idea what the Harris policies are. There's so little that's been released that I don't know if I can look it up, I suppose, but I don't know of a Democratic platform. Nothing that I have seen.
Well, that's what the groups are supposed to all be together the first couple of days over McCormick Place and everything else. And I mean, that's what I'm asking, if they actually have a formal one.
I know the Republicans went through the process of approving it. I just know that because I saw it in the news.
All right. I have a some point here. I want to, but let's do sports first because it's more fun.
By the way, and it's a platform. It's still generalities.
Oh yeah, know. Yeah. Motherhood,
you know,
and
it's nothing that you can really you know that it's not legislation. Let's put it that way. It's not written legislation ready to go. Okay, so sports. Actually, Wednesday afternoon, after you and I got done, Joey Votto announced his retirement, effective immediately.
I thought he wasn't even playing this year.
He hasn't played this year. He played his final season in Cincinnati last year. He signed on with the Blue Jays, got injured right away in spring training. Started to work on a comeback at the AAA level. It just wasn't going well, and so he just said, you know, that's it. Time to hang him up after 17 years. But what a career that
guy
had.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, he is, in my mind, right into the Hall of Fame. He is on his way. Known for his discipline more so than his power, although he did have seasons with home runs of as high as 36, twice. I'm looking at his stat lines a lot in the 20s. There's a 37, a lot of 25s, 24s, so he wasn't devoid of it. Runs batted in, he had 1, 2, 3 seasons over 100, another one of 99, 97, you know, so he was productive. But his on-base percentages were otherworldly. Over 400 for his 17-year career. 409.
That's really something.
That is utterly amazing. His high water mark was 2012 when his on-base percentage was 474. But he had another year of 454. I mean, what a player! Also, when they do wins above replacement, he was an all-around player. So as a position player, he spent 6 seasons in the top 10, counting his offense and his defense. And 7 seasons in the top 10 just for the offensive wins above replacement. Really, really fine ball player. Never liked seeing him come up in a clutch situation. He was driving in the run. That was it. It was over. So that's one little cute note. Note number 2 is college football. Real games start this week. Saturday at noon Eastern, we get Florida State and Georgia Tech. They're playing in Ireland.
Are we still going to call it college football now that it's pro football?
Well, yeah, we can call it minor league football if you want.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, but nevertheless, I'll get to that in a minute when we hit on the Bears. But we have them on Saturday, and then as you get later in the week, there's some games on Thursday. Nothing of great consequence. Probably the biggest one is Southern Utah against Utah, just because Utah's a real thing. But then next Saturday, a week from tomorrow, we get Clemson and Georgia, Penn State, West Virginia. So there's some pretty significant openers for some of these teams, and leading up to. That weekend, we also hit our beloved Fighting Irish at Texas A&M. That's a pretty substantial opener. So there's some good stuff coming up if you like college football.
Well, I don't see the Irish schedule is so horrible that if they lose that game, I don't see how they come back.
Oh, I don't know. I actually know some of the local people saying that one's at risk, but they could lose that game and still go 11-1.
That's what I'm saying. The rest of the...
You're saying that, yeah, they can come back from it. But, it's a game that if they go and win, there's still pitfalls and pratfalls, especially coaching that age group. How do you get them, keep them in right mind through the whole...
I mean, it's the worst schedule. It's the worst schedule I think I've ever seen for them.
Yeah, they have a few of the usual suspects. So they have to play Louisville, who's pretty good, and beat them last year, beat them badly last year. They have to play Florida State. They have to play Southern California. So there's challenges, but what's paced in between, what's spaced out in between it isn't very good.
Well, they got a couple of division, what do they call them? Not even
one. Double-A teams? Yeah. I don't know that they do this year. I know they have.
I thought they were like Akron or somebody.
Well, Akron is in the Mid-America Conference.
Well,
they have Northern Illinois. I'll pull that up. Give me half a sec here. So we go drop that down, and we say football schedule. So they have Texas A&M, then they get Northern Illinois. They play at Purdue, they play at Purdue. Then they get Miami, Ohio. So two of their first four games are Mid-America Conference teams. And then as you go through and look at some of the other ones, then you get Louisville, then you get Stanford, not very good, but at least a major conference team.
Well, it used to be, Kevin, I'd rag once in a while about how when you played in Northern Illinois or Miami of Ohio, how you the difference in budgets. Now I'm going to look at the difference in payroll, for God's sake.
Yeah, no kidding. So then you get Georgia Tech, Navy, Florida State, Virginia, Army at West Point, Army in at Yankee Stadium, excuse me, and then Southern Cal. So there's no, there's no lower division teams on that schedule, but there are some teams that they ought to, they shouldn't have to sweat to beat them, and then they close out.
Well, Army, Navy, Northern Illinois, and Miami, Ohio. Actually, I know somebody who went to Miami, Ohio, and they do have a payroll, believe it or not. Yeah. But I can't be much of a payroll in Northern Illinois.
Well, they have good football players, but if you're an aspiring playoff team and an aspiring, national championship contender, you should never have to sweat those teams.
No, well, that's the truth.
They might give you a tussle for a quarter or a quarter and a half, but at some point you just start pulling away from them.
Hey, I don't know if you listen to some of this stuff. I mean, Lou was, of course, doing ranting Lou yesterday regarding.
I have never known Lou to rant. Okay.
When it came to should Biden have been pitched out of office and all this other stuff. So I did what you should never do, Kevin. I mean, I got to stop doing this. When I read all the COVID stuff, the rules about the payroll tax to payrolls, they're going to reduce what they call that thing, the payroll reduction or reduction act, or not reduction act, but the whatever. You actually read this stuff and you look at it. Who wrote this stuff? I mean, what manner of moron? And look at the industry it obviously favors. And how could somebody in Congress not read it, who's supposed to know more about this than me, and not say this thing's ridiculous? I went to look at this, the 25th Amendment. I don't think I've a bigger thing of crap in my life. Did you ever see the Star Trek episode with the where Kirk was going nuts over a creature that he thought he could kill 11 years before and he didn't, and blamed himself and the whole? I think the title of it was Obsession. Well, he started acting totally weird because everybody else just wanted to get the hell out of there because the thing killed like two people. And he was convinced it was the same creature that he had spotted way across the galaxy 11 years earlier, and nobody else believed him. So he was going a little goofy. And Spock and McCoy has the ability to remove him from command, right? He's a surgeon. So when they go to talk to him, they say, Spock says something to the effect, and I didn't listen to it again, that, Captain, on the surface, there seems to be a change in behavior and a change in something. So, and Kirk says to him, Mr. Spock, that's exactly the word you're supposed to use coming from the manual, and I'll respond exactly how I'm supposed to respond. But there was a procedure for making that, for Spock to do that, and he had to have McCoy with him because it was McCoy's judgments, not Spock's. And there was a procedure to do it, even if it was only the lines prescribed. But the lines were not insulting. They were not anything. They were prescribed in a way that it was in the manual. Like there was a procedure. I mean, I'm not huge on procedures, but for something like this. So I'm reading this thing in the 25th Amendment about the president declaration by vice president and cabinet members of president's inability. Kevin, this thing is so screwed up. There is no procedure here whatsoever. There's a voluntary transfer, like when somebody gets put out for a root canal or something, they transfer the power to the vice president until he wakes up, right? Well, this declaration by Vice President Cam, you would think in here that there would be somebody's ability to, if it's a cabinet and vice president determination that the man is unable, that there would be a procedure that says, okay, the vice president and the I'm not saying what the procedure ought to be. I'm just saying an example. The vice president and, say, the secretary of state have the ability to call a cabinet meeting or something like that where everybody has to attend and have to proceed with what they think is the problem. You would think there'd be some kind of medical evaluation, something like that. There's none of that. What this says here is if these guys decide to do it, however they decide to meet or do it, get a load of this. They give a letter. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers or the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may provide, well, first of all, they didn't provide anybody, so who the hell are we talking about? Transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. The vice president, though, shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the acting president. However, the president gets 4 days to put his letter back to the president pro tem and the speaker of the House to say he is okay. And then there has to be a two-thirds vote to, like, but it doesn't say who, it is totally undefined as to who these people even are. I mean, it might be the cabinet, it might be the vice president, it might be executives in the White House, whoever the hell they could be. But there's no process whatsoever of the senior cabinet members, which I would say the Secretary of State probably and Secretary of Treasury, for them to call a meeting where everybody has to attend. There's none whatsoever. And then it also says, and this is even crazier, well, here's a guy, John Farrick, is a principal draftman of the amendment, writes that the Congress deliberately left the terms unable and inability undefined, since cases of inability could take various forms not neatly fitting into a rigid definition. And then he says that no specific threshold, medical or otherwise, for the inability contemplated in Section 4. The framers specifically rejected any definition of the term, prioritizing flexibility. Those implementing Section 4 should focus on whether, in an objective sense, taking all the circumstances into account, the president is unable to discharge the power and duties of office. The amendment does not require that any particular type or amount of evidence to be submitted to determine that the president is unable to perform his duties. While the framers did imagine that medical evidence would be helpful in the determination of whether the president is unable, neither medical expertise nor diagnosis required for determination of inability. Kevin, who wrote this crap? This is insane.
Well, yeah. But it sure made it easy for a group of people to go to Biden and say, we're going to do this to you if you don't step aside.
But we don't know what they said.
Or if you don't, as Jill Biden said at the in her convention speech, if you don't look deep into your soul and do what's right for the party.
Well, the same thing sort of happened to Nixon, right?
Well, yeah, different circumstances.
Yeah.
They were telling him he would lose an impeachment vote.
But I'm saying,
would lose in the Senate.
But have you ever read anything so ridiculously jumbled up to the point where it's useless?
Yeah, it's called the law, and like many other laws, it is so ridiculously jumbled up. And then when they want to make amendments, you know, they're writing these 1,000-2,000 pages of legislation. When they want to make amendments, and they don't want to go back and rewrite the original paragraph, so they'll have one later in the law that says this supersedes this paragraph that we wrote earlier in the law. I mean, try and follow that kind of crap, too.
Well, I mean,
this is why Illinois does have it right. You know, one issue for each law.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it, and that's the way it needs to be. And I would go further than that, and I would say everybody who's going to vote, to be able to vote, this should be the rules of the Senate, that if you're going to vote on something, you have to sign an affidavit that says, I read it.
Well, if I was going to redo this,
I read it.
Yeah, but
that would make a lot of the 1,000-page laws go away.
Well, I would say that if I were to rewrite this thing, I'd look at the Star Trek and I'd say, two of the three senior members of the cabinet, which would be, I guess, Treasury, Secretary of State, and Defense, probably, right, have the ability to call a cabinet meeting without the president or vice president being there to discuss the issue. That's what I'd have something in there, because you don't really want the vice president in there because he's the one who benefits, maybe, right? So it should be a meeting of those guys without those other two people to discuss, and there should be evidence presented, and they should have the ability to get some kind of a medical report. Would be me. But then again,
sounds right.
But now that would be way too simple, right? And because then the procedure would be there. Who calls the meeting? You have to show up. I wouldn't even know who the hell would have the meeting reading this thing, would you?
Well, let me see. Yeah, it's stupid. It's vague. It has been, fortunately, because you could have it capriciously invoked. And fortunately, that hasn't happened. If anything, we've gone the other way and been perfectly fine with concealing incapacity.
Yeah, I wonder, we'd never get the answer to this question. With Reagan, I mean, he was not going to run again. So, I use the term propping him up for 6 months. I think I would probably agree with that, actually. I don't think you'd have to throw the guy out in November. But if it happened in his first term, I don't know, do you think he would have sallied forth even though he was losing it and everybody around him knew it?
That's what we just did.
Well, yeah, but then I think he degraded so fast it became obvious to everybody it wasn't going to happen.
No, I totally disagree with you. He did not degrade so fast. He degraded continuously throughout his term, but he wasn't in good shape when he was first elected.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
He was degraded then. He was not not nearly as bad as he became, but I totally disagree with you. It was obvious at the time, and there were a lot of people saying so. So it's not just.
Well, I think there was a dramatic degradation between the State of the Union and the debate.
I just think you caught a day on the State of the Union. It may have been a day when he was drugged, where they cocktailed him. It may have been a lot of things, but typical of that kind of disease is for you to have your good days and your bad. So they caught him on the right day for the State of the Union. But there were so many other times before the State of the Union that looked just like the debate. I mean, he'd get up and speak all the time, and the big tell was he'd be reading something on the teleprompter, he'd get totally lost, and then he'd go, well, anyway.
So it sounds like us, Stacks and Jack.
Yeah, well, yeah, but not me, but you. You're aging and decrepit, so that's the way.
I'm turning into without the Nobel Prize. I'm turning into George Stigler. I start saying something, and I realize I should have said something before what I was going to say and back up. When he used to do it all the time, because he'd start with something and he realized before he could explain that point, he really needed to do a predecessor point. And you keep backing up, and I'm going, God, if I ever get like that, shoot me. I'm getting like that. not that bad.
My kids have specific instructions about when to put me down, and generally it has something to do with me wearing plaid shorts, a striped shirt, maybe a pair of sandals with black knee socks on.
A metal detector?
And a metal detector scraping around for change. They know that it is okay to put me down under those circumstances.
Oh, God.
And I am confident that if you ask them, they would tell you the same thing.
Well, the thing of it is, though, I do sometimes, especially if I'm talking to Hal or Russell, and we get above most people's pay grade when it comes to economic stuff, I start saying something, I go, wait a minute, before I say that, I got to at least explain what the hell I'm talking about. There's a that kind of thing. Anyway, we're off to crazy land. What happened to the good old days when I seem to recall the convention was you didn't start campaigning till after Labor Day? When did that go, by the way, the dodo bird?
Now, they've been campaigning for a year.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I like the old style
been
better.
For a long time, Tom.
I know. I'm just saying, when did it end? Was it like 30 years ago or 40? It been Kennedy and Nixon.
I don't know.
But yeah, is the money who...
The question is, when do you start paying attention to it?
Well,
when does
that's the truth.
Person start paying attention to it?
In regards to all this money that goes into these conventions, is that stuff even the... I'd love to find a... find out what that... Is that kind of, is that considered an okay deduction? What is that? If you have to pay that much for access and a skybox, I mean, I'm sure it was the same up in Milwaukee. Other donors. And what do you pay for, a booze tent downstairs if you're a lobbyist or something?
You pay a hell of a lot.
You got to pay for the booze and everything, but why aren't you and I a caterer or something like that? I got to believe most of that stuff comes in from what's his name's liquor company? Wirtz. It's got to be Wirtz's place, right?
It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Hey, can we cut to break? I need to start my way to South Bend. I'll jump in the car and rejoin.
Yep, SP Futures up 29, NASDAQ Futures up 152. You're right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 28. NASDAQ Futures up 147. We're doing the pretty nice bounce here. Back about just about the whole. We'll go through. Yesterday, it's not the whole way. What am I talking about here? Yesterday, the Dow was down 177. S&P's down 50. And we're now up 27, so about halfway. NASDAQ was down 299, which is a big move. And we're back 147. So we're about halfway on both the S&P and the NASDAQ. Yesterday, it kept trying to come back, but it didn't. And it sold off in a close. It was pretty brutal. Over in Europe, at the DAX up 106.6%. We got the FTSE up 27.3%. CAC around up 40.5%. Over in Asia, Nikkei's up 153, 38,364. Hang Seng down 28. Not much there, 0.2%. Hang Seng up 5 points. Call that not much either. Bonds down 1 basis point, 3.85. The Bund unchanged, 2.25. Japan up 2 basis points, 0.90. This yield curve is definitely flattening out some, because we've had the 10-year is almost at 3.9, 3.86, so it's creeping up. The 30-year is 4.13, and it looks like they're going to lower the short-term, which is already down to like 5.1 from 5.5, so you still got an inverted curve, but it's getting less inverted. Oil, up 95 cents, 73.96, still kind of low end of the range, say that every morning. Brent up 89 cents, 78.11. Natural gas down 3 cents, 202. In danger of going under $2. RBOB up a penny, 226. We've got gold, which was down yesterday, bouncing back today, up 1870. 25.35 was down like 30 yesterday. So again, it's about halfway back. Silver up 40 cents, 29.45. Copper up a penny, 416. Foreign exchange, which has been causing a lot of this. Still got the euro is a 111.1, so it's at the highest point in a while. British pound 131, that's definitely the highest point in a while. Japan 146.08. Crypto at $477, 60,776. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs won again.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 57 degrees right now with a high of 81. Partly sunny and pleasant. Heat and humidity will be over the weekend. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 67 degrees. Under Phoenix, Arizona, 85 degrees right now with a high of 107. Sunny to partly cloudy and very, very warm. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 83 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's 12 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 29 minutes. We're looking at 19 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. It's another 20 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Cubs beat the Tigers 10-2. And today we got a couple of the games. Cubs play the Marlins at 6:10 p.m. The White Sox play the Tigers at 7:10 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Red Sox at 6:10 p.m. Lastly, the NFL preseason game was yesterday. One of those, the Bears beat the Chiefs 31-21. And the football season is about a week away. That's all I got for you, Chief, for right now.
Yeah, I think somebody might be starting next week, somebody overseas, but the Bears never don't start till the 8th, I don't think.
I don't think it's the Bears, actually, but the actual like football season starts the 4th, if I'm not wrong.
The 4th, yes. Yeah, they're playing, somebody's playing overseas, or there's a Monday night or something going on, but yeah, because, I mean, the first Sunday's not till the 8th, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, there's a couple games before then. Yeah, Kevin,
okay,
probably
I'm
going
to check it out and get back to you on the next break.
Do we have Kevin back?
Yeah, we do.
Kevin, you ever... at a very small scale.
I am back.
At a very small scale, just when you have something like that convention. All right, I don't think I ever told this story, but when Craig Fowler, our buddy Craig, was the head of the Notre Dame Club of Chicago, and they did the Rackney dinner every year, he calls me up and he goes, "There's one thing I don't want to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
How about you running the party for the halves, right, before and after in a suite?" And I go, "Okay, I can do that." And so I figured out where the suite was. I went over there. God, Kevin, I was such a Chicago guy. You'd have been so proud of me. But I figured out, in order to get stuff for free, and we're talking, Racking Dinner used to get like 1,000 people. So the hotel, and we had the ability to tell the hotel, say, you know, what kind of beer they would serve downstairs for all the people that weren't in the, you know, the cool guy suite, which is, you know, 900 and some people. So that's a lot of beers you're going to sell. So, evidently, I think they had sold Bud or Miller before, and one of the guys from the one place comes to me, and he finds out I'm in charge of the booze, and he goes, "You know, we'd like you to tell a hotel just to serve Miller products." And I said, "Well, why would I do that necessarily?" He goes, "Well, you guys got this suite, right?" And I go, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, you don't really want to buy beer for the suite, do you?" And I said, "Well, no." He said, "How many cases do you need?" I said, "How about like 30? He goes, "You got them." And I told the hotel we want Miller products downstairs, and away we went. Can you imagine? Can you imagine at the United Center with all those people being able to direct what kind of booze, what kind of whiskey you have up there, and what kind of beer you're serving? What that's worth? I mean, we're talking about selling stuff. At, you know,
you're saying there's little money to be made off of these conventions?
Oh God, it's. I mean, what do you think those people are paying? What do you think they're paying per hot dog or per shrimp in those skyboxes, and for the beers up there? I mean, it's
oh God, you know, I mean, it's bad enough what you have to pay for a hot dog for a basketball game. So,
oh, I know, but I tell you, Kevin, just so you know that the Chicago roots run deep. I think this was at the Hyatt or one of those places. So downstairs there's the docks and stuff. So I pull my Bronco in there with another guy, and we're loaded with booze. And the guy goes, "You can't park here." And I said, "Well, you know what? We need to park here because we probably have to run out and get some more booze depending on what people are drinking." And all of a sudden, a Benjamin went from my hand to his. He goes, "I think you should park here all night." it is so spectacular. So that I get the guy who's the head of whatever the hell he was. He was in charge of, like, ice and cups and stuff. I said, "We're going to have about 150 people. We need a whole bunch of cups. We need a whole bunch of ice. Here's about $200. Does that cover it?" And the guy goes, "It covers it." "Don't worry. We'll take care of it." Isn't it beautiful when you do that? When things just kind of work? Just saying.
Well, yeah, this is, you know, capitalism works.
It sure does.
Motivated self-interest works.
But I mean, it's a But I mean, there's a way you can make people feel like they're part of the deal instead of you better do this or I'm going to call your boss or something like that. You know, it's just there's a way to engage people. I'm not just saying paying them all off. There's between being nice to people, between being other stuff. There's a way to get things done where everybody doesn't dislike you. I mean, and hope you fall off a cliff the next day. And I wish politicians were a little better
yet
at that.
There are so and you're right, Tom. And there are yet so many people who just think they have to bully everybody to get their way.
I know, and it's not the way.
It is not a real good way to get things done. No, it is not.
What the?
And that's that's true. You know, it's true in life. It's true in career. It's you know. Ideally, you get people to do things because you ask them to do it.
Yeah, and they're part of a. I mean, everybody at Pullman wanted to be part of the gorgeous car that went off the line and said, "I did that. I'm part of that." And people like to be part of something that works, for God's sake.
Yeah, so pride of workmanship is important. I mean, we're getting into one of my, a management class right now. So pride of workmanship is part of it, but when everybody wants to be part of that gleaming, beautiful car that's coming off the line, you're also saying, there's a certain amount of vision. What are we trying to be as a group? What are we trying to accomplish? What do we produce? And it's more than just saying we're going to produce a railroad car or or anything like that. What we're saying is we're going to do, we're going to create something beautiful, something really good. And that's a little bit higher purpose than just, crank that thing out.
Well, yeah, when somebody gets on a thing 20 years from now and says, man, whoever built this thing did a nice job, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and, that's it. I actually, one of my proudest moments from my programming days was years later, when I was in charge of IT and operations in Michigan, at a bank in Michigan, and we were part of the 7th Fed District, our clearing destination in Michigan was through Detroit, through the Detroit Fed branch, but when we bought banks in Northwest Indiana, that was part of the Chicago Fed District, so I got somebody from American National called on me. American National still existed as a subsidiary of First Chicago in those days. And this was the 90s. And I wrote their original, computer access system for cash management purposes for treasurers in the 70s. And they came. I had this guy come out and call on me to see if we could clear our checks through American National. And he gave me the catalog of all of their services, and they had screen examples of what it looked like, their cash management reporting system, and I looked at that and said, that's my code. 20 years later, it's wow. Still running.
Well, when you see,
and I knew it because I knew the layout of the reports.
Yeah, you can tell
I knew
yours.
How the separators looked. I knew how all of that looked. And the only difference is instead of running, mainframe CICS stuff, spitting out stuff to a Texas Instruments thermal printer with an acoustic coupler on it, it was being delivered to PCs now.
Acoustic coupler, this is a name from the past, wow.
Yep, that's that little thing where you got a couple of little cups on the printer and you just plop down the telephone on it and it screeches at you like the old fax machines used to when it's making the connection, doing the handshake for the computer connection.
Well, Kevin, we have two people that are now running for president that will, do whatever they have to do to throw a baby off a bridge for a vote, and they're going to argue about the other guy's this lousy and she's this lousy. And yet, on Stacks and Jacks, I think we continually have created a basis for economic concern. And obviously with Lou and some people and maybe in Mike helping out, we've learned a lot about the dangers in the, I won't call them brush fires, wars, whatever you want to call them, going on all over the damn place. So we've kind of covered the bases pretty well, I think, because obviously, Mike's been a big help with the you know, how the government, the Department of Defense works and who does what and where and so forth, and obviously Lou's up on that stuff. So we have a pretty good background here of all the issues that are facing whoever it ends up being. My concern is, I'm not so sure either one of them feels the issues that we have zeroed in on, which I think are pretty much the bigger ones, are either important or they're not a problem or they're never going to discuss them. And I look at the economic numbers, which is what I'm better at, and I sit there and go, I don't really care. You know, it's like I'm in the bus in MASH with a bullet in my leg. I don't really care if the doctor is a Democrat or Republican. I just want the doctor to fix my friggin' leg. And I'm not so sure which group I trust to do any of this stuff, because you go back 25 years, there's been plenty of Republican and Democratic presidents, and it's happened all along the way. So I mean, it's not obvious to me that either party is the fixer. Whenever they've been in there, they haven't done it. I mean, it's, I don't know, maybe these guys are better, or the problems are more egregious, and they're going to have to address them or something. I don't see anybody doing anything, do you?
Well, until we crash, nobody's going to fix deficit spending. So that's off the table. And I know that for you, that's almost the sum total of it. When I start to look at a few other things, I think the, you know, issues of related to regulation, I don't think there's a comparison there.
I would
agree. When it comes to especially Middle Eastern policy, I don't think there's much comparison there either. On the one hand, we had started down the road with a series of bilateral accords, the Abraham Accords, and that became a dirty word right away in the Biden administration. And we also had a really, really financially impaired Iran, who was not able to fund Hezbollah, not able to fund Hamas to the extent that they are now. So I don't think there's really a comparison there either. And you know, when it came to the Afghanistan withdrawal, when it was announced and before it happened, VP Harris in an interview said very proudly that she was the last person in the room for that decision. She was the one, you know, affirming it with Joe Biden. And now she's trying to run away from that, but it's pretty hard.
Well, I mean,
to do.
It was leaving a place. It was every bit as screwed up as when Nixon pulled us out of Vietnam, and he was a Republican.
Yeah, but there was a difference. You know, you don't give up the air base, certainly not before everybody's out. Don't give up control of the air base, period.
Somehow, somebody had some, well, Mike could take umbrage of this, that he'd probably say they listened to the wrong person, but somebody said that the Afghanis, I seem to recall some of this, could hold the place for 2 weeks or something, and it was about 2 days. I don't know who gave them that. But I mean, I don't really remember enough of the details.
But why leave it to them at all? Why leave it to 2 weeks?
I'm just
we'll hold the place until the last plane is out.
When things are disasters, I don't know that I'm not so sure that whatever the difference between the Republicans' attitude toward Iran, if Hamas pulled this crap, that blew the whole thing up. And I really someday. Hope I live long enough, probably 30 years, the real truth's going to come out of that thing. Something was weird with that, with the stock market already moving. I think the Israelis kind of knew that there was something going on, and they were surprised at the size of the size and the atrocity of it. I mean, something strange there, Kevin. I don't think that they were totally in the dark about that. And I don't. I'm not about to accuse the guy having political problems at home, hoping there's like a small raid so his political problems go away. I wouldn't accuse anybody of that, especially somebody who's supposed to be a religious person. I mean, it's okay to have a few people croak to keep me in office. I would never accuse anybody of that, but something seems fishy from day one, doesn't it? I mean, in the whole mess. And I think the Hamas guys went way too far. Obviously, they went way too far, killing women and kids and everything else. I mean, I'd really like to know exactly what happened there, and I don't think anybody ever will know. I don't know. Whoever was in the White House, it could have been Fred Bassett. I don't know if it would have made any difference.
Well, I don't think the White House would have made any difference at that point. Other than if you can choke off their funding, it is pretty hard for them to plan and execute on that scale.
I think that they're getting most of their money through oil barter, and I don't know how you cut that off unless you start.
Well, you don't cut it off completely, but even if you cut it in half, that's, you know, that.
But I mean,
that's
what do you,
that's a big deal to Iran's economy, and so getting people in line on the sanctions was absolutely critical to keeping Iran in check, and by, you know, by just pulling backing off of that, all of a sudden they have cash flow that they never had.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't really know the methodology and how they're doing this, but I don't think anybody was going to have Navy ships stop Iran oil tankers. Were they? I know we would do that. We haven't done it. We didn't do it.
No, it was don't buy it.
I'm talking about, I said oil barter. I mean, oil manages to get out and get somewhere, and yet people, this is what I have this real suspicious bent. I mean, and I don't care whose administration it was. If it was you and me, and we actually gave a crap about this, not saying that these guys don't, I would randomly check every tanker that comes into New Orleans or those places, and if I find one that the oil came from Iran through two or three other people, and maybe went to Rotterdam first, whoever that was, tell you what, Kevin, there'd be people in jail. And I, you know, I'm not Mr. Law and Order, but I don't think the people that we have in charge, they wink and a nod at all this crap. Because there's money involved all over the place. And, you know, maybe they're getting a piece of it, maybe they're not. I don't know what it is, but I think if we were to check, we've had a lot of Iranian oil come here. If you actually look at the oil itself. I'm I'm saying over the last however many years. And we've had, you know, we've had in the last, what, how many years we've had? Well, it's been exactly the same. We've had 12 years of Republicans and 12 years of Democrats, right? In the last 24 years. And guess what? The deficit goes up every year, and I don't think these foreign things change all that much year to year. I mean, something's going on with people we don't see.
Yeah, what would Hal tell you is what we've had the last 24 years is 24 years of uniparty.
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of economic non-functioning and everything else. These guys have figured out, really, in the last, really since Bush, he wasn't the first guy that did it, the Romans did it. Once they figured out that whatever you spend, whatever the Federal Reserve backs you up, I mean, the idea that the money supply is going north pretty rapidly now again, to me, is it's an economic mortal sin in my mind, but nobody cares what I think. But as long as people see the stock market going up, and we have enough people, thankfully, that have, you know, IRAs here at PTI and other places that are going up every day, I don't want my clients to not make dough. It feels great. I just know it's something weird about it. Just saying, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of economics and the announcement this week of the 800 and some odd thousand jobs adjustment, after what we've seen on a month-by-month basis and the constant downward adjustments, what makes anybody think that that's not really 1.5 million?
I've been searching for 2 days. I was even, Carl will be on in a bit. I'm not so sure what that number represents, Kevin. Is it off the establishment survey? Is it off the household survey? Do you have any idea?
I'm not sure, and you and Carl should have that question, and unfortunately I'm not going to be able to listen live, but I will catch it on the recording.
I mean, I'm trying to every month.
It has to do something, and this is the monthly adjustments too. There's something about that I saw, and I didn't have time to really read it, so I just took a glance at it. But how many businesses start and die?
Yeah.
Inside the course of the measurement period, and so they're making their wild ass guesses there. And then they make the adjustments, saying, "Well, more businesses died than we thought, or fewer businesses." There's something in there about that, and that's fine. That's fine for what it is, but that would be another argument for using the unadjusted household numbers.
Well, there's three or four levels here, and I'll try and pop these out here before we have Carl. And as we were sending it around yesterday, there's the establishment number that comes out where they allegedly. I don't know if it's a random sample or they call the same people. I don't know, Kevin. To make it comparative, they probably call some of the same people, I'm thinking, or else you wouldn't know from one month to the next. But so they somehow survey establishments being, well, PTI is too small, but I don't know how big you have to be. They call up, O'Neill's Bearing Company, and you have 2,000 employees, and you say, well, we had 2,000 last month, now we got 2,010. Okay, well, there's 10. Okay, so they do this sample, and they add it up, and they must figure out how big the sample is and apply it to the rest of the population, correct?
Yes, that's true.
And so then...
That's accurate.
So then next month, somehow or another, they get this adjustment for the next 2 months, where they say, oh, the July numbers were down, either pushed down or pushed up. I have heard them seem pushed up, but it seemed like most of the time they're pushed down. Now, I don't know, when I say most, I can't say if it's 70%, 80%, 90%, but it seems like most of the time they... Then there's actually a two-month adjustment. Now there's also this birth-death number. There's people that you don't know that are being hired because they're 1099 or contracting people, and you and I are building 10 houses, and all of a sudden we hired 25 people. Nobody knows about it till January. But there has to be some sort of a guess as to how many people like us are building the 10 houses. Are we saying 10's enough and we lay everybody off? There's some estimate there. But you would think that this number would be, on one level, a total of all the revisions for the last 12 months. First of all, it's not the last 12 months. It's up till last March. So it's almost 6 months ago. And by the way,
it's a 12-month revision as of last March. And then there's another 12 months happening right now.
But this is also a preliminary number. So it's not adjusting either the household number or the other number that we know of, not till January. Because they're going to make sure that this number is right. But I can't figure out what the damn number is, whether it's the all the revisions, if it's the birth and death number, if it's some combination of the two, if it's from the household. I tell you what, the household survey only has us up 50,000 people in the last 8 months. So if they're going to take 800,000 out of there, that's a chunk. Now, the establishment survey, they've been reporting, 250 a month for like a year. 250 to 300,000, so that's 3 million people. So we all think that's a little aggressive. So if you took 800,000 out of there, I don't know what you did. You didn't do very much. You know what I'm saying? But if you yank it out of the household number, well, that's like pulling off one of your toes, for God's sake. I mean, the household number is not up that much to start with. So, but I can't. The more I read yesterday, the more confused I got. To be honest with you.
Yeah, and I really don't like pulling off toes.
No, it's but I mean, because I mean, the bureau, I actually have I saved it. I actually saved the announcement that came out, and it went through it. Mostly, it's in the service industry. Now, you know, I mean, I'll get this thing up here in a second, and I will read it to everyone. Where are we? Here it is: a 2024 preliminary benchmark revision from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It tells you. It's a preliminary one. Well, here's the numbers. Benchmark revision. Total non-farm is the 818 that you're referring. Total private's actually 819. They must have added 1,000 people in government somewhere. Construction's down 45. Manufacturing's down 115. Trade, transportation, utilities down 104. Information down 68. Professional and business services down 358. What do you suppose is in there, Kevin? Financial activities down 76. Information down 68, whatever that is. Government is up 1. Other services are up 1. How could it be 2 years after COVID, how could we be adjusting down leisure and hospitality by 150,000 people?
Because we can't afford it. We can't afford leisure and hospitality
anymore. I'm saying these are the numbers. The only one that's up is... where you are, transportation and warehousing is up 56,000. And
it's distribution. It's just coming in from overseas. So manufacturing is down, warehousing and transportation is up. You have to get the products out, even if you're not making them here.
But I don't know what the numbers were originally for. Because there's a positive in private education and health services up 87,000. Now, was the leisure and hospitality number, that's the number that Carl talks about every month, is being really high. That's where all the hiring is. So to pull 150 out of there, you know, it doesn't do the same as pulling them out of the a household survey, which is always already lousy. So,
well, and also remember that we're just not selling as much stuff too.
Right.
So you'll look and you'll find, you know, what are we talking, like up 14 or up 20%, whatever the number is for up retail sales. But if you look at actual items sold, since 2021, we're down 3-4%.
That's why we don't look at that. We look at the gross number.
Right, and that's a big number across the entire retail shopping base. So, yeah, of course that turns up in the adjusted numbers, because you're right. We've been looking at the gross numbers, and everybody says, "Oh, well, this all makes sense." And then you start making the adjustments. Well, you have to look at the adjustments for the actual sales volume and say, "Well, the adjustment makes sense too, doesn't it?"
Well, you never. Do you think they ever had a recession in Weimar Germany? How could you have a recession when you pour money in every day?
Not until we had a depression.
Yeah. I was reading, what the hell was the country that just cut their, one of the guys, Egypt, it just raised their interest rates to like some huge number. And, you know, it's funny because they met one of the problems they have with this administration. Hopefully, if this lady gets in, she will turn some of these people around. I don't know if she can or will, but... the idea that the money supply doesn't mean anything. So I'm sitting there reading how Egypt had like a, I got it buried here, but I don't have time to pull it up, had like a 50% inflation rate last year. So what do you suppose I do, Kevin? I go right for the money supply numbers. Hey, guess what? They're up 50%, almost identical. Why do people continually say that this doesn't matter anymore?
Well, it's that modern economic theory, Tom. You just got to get with the times.
Well, if you're the one getting the money, I guess it makes a difference. You know, I mean, if we're getting the beer contract at the stadium, the United Center, I think it's good for us, right? If we're not, nah, not so good. So anyway, where are you traveling to? Where are you off to?
I am just a few minutes away from Riley High School. I have to meet with a high school teacher about a joint field trip that we're doing with high school and college students.
Hey, good for you.
So.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
it's a field trip over to Notre Dame to meet with the IT people over at Notre Dame.
Well, hey, there you go. All right, well, have a good time. Make yourself worthwhile, like it seems like you're doing, and we will talk over the weekend as we usually do. Hey, okay. I tell you, I'm going to the Sox game. I said I was never going to another game, and I'm going Tuesday night.
What'd you do? Lose a bet?
Actually, guess what? I'm going to be in a skybox.
Yeah. Exciting.
The gentleman that Notre Dame grad, a guy named Marty O'Connell, a spectacular guy. When I came down here, he's the one that basically taught me everything I knew other than the professors at the University of Chicago about stock options. And he has his MBA from the University of Chicago, I believe, and his law degree from Stanford. One of the smartest and nicest men I ever met. It's his 80th birthday, and his wife's throwing a party in the skybox. I couldn't say no. So there you go.
Okay. Well, have fun.
I will do. Well, we'll talk before then. Right. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 159. Do we have Professor Carl?
Yeah, we do.
Carl,
you
with us?
You do.
What's up, bud?
Well, you know, we've had the end of the crazy, and by the way, I didn't get to sing the night Chicago died.
Oh God.
Na 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 na. Yeah.
Who was that? Was that Elvis? Wasn't it? No, that wasn't Elvis. What did he?
No.
He did the baby born in the ghetto. That was his.
I fully expected that might happen. But, of course, you know, we were told, oh, no, this won't be 1968 again. Well, it wasn't. I you know, I mean, although the shootapalooza that you guys have was not, was not really suspended.
No.
Look at Hey Jackass, and, you get the chronicle of Chicago's family values.
The only problem with, not a problem with Hey Jackass is, I think since so many more, it used to be all the murders were on the weekends. Now they're not.
Well, yeah, no. It's now they're all the time.
So they got to start doing a daily thing, which they probably don't want to do because they're doing enough work.
Well, you know, like I said, chronicle Chicago's family values. This benchmark revision, the stenographers of insanity. Including one that I less than affectionately refer to as Zero. Of course, trumpeted, you know, that this was coming for a week and a half before it did. And then, the breathless interpretations of you know, what actually showed up. First off, as I have said repeatedly on the show and have for, you know, since I've been writing my column, going back all the way to 07, and in fact, the moniker comes from when I used to track this stuff when I was running my internet company, because, you know, jobs report's kind of a leading indicator for a lot of things in the economy, and also a concurrent indicator, depending on where you look in it. Okay, so there's a lot of data in there that you can unpack, and if you're a CEO and you're running a firm, it's one of those economic reports you really ought to watch. If you're not, you're kind of stupid. And this revision, this benchmark revision, comes out every year.
Does it always come out in March with the final one coming in January? I mean, it seems like it's a big lag.
So this particular, this one is the largest revision in terms of percentage changes since the crash in 08. All right. The magnitude of these revisions tends to be considerably larger when there is an economic turning point of some kind that is underway. And we were talking the other couple of weeks ago about the fact that we have a collapsing birth rate in the United States and a lot of the economic factors that have been driving that. I've been talking about that for a long time. And it's in this employment data with a 16-year lag, because that's how long it takes for a born baby to end up in the in the workforce numbers, right? Because that's, you know, not institutional, the population is 16 plus. So if you have a kid today, that child will show up 16 years from now in that data set. And if you look at what's happened since 2000, we've gone from a approximately 2.2% of population growth rate every year to 0.57, I think, is the latest number. Much smaller, needless to say, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you graph that, though, every month, which a lot of people would be inclined to do, right? Because, you know, well, is this a straight line? Is it a, you know, what's it look like, you know, if you visualize it? You would see that it's a sawtooth. And you'd be like, what the? And the reason is that the non-institutional population is an estimate every month until January. And then on January, the benchmark revision comes in. And they do that off the ACS, which is that long-form census thing that you might get that's not done every 10 years, it's done all the time. And so every January, that number is corrected. And as a result, if you're actually trying to look at these trends...
Carol, even though they pester the hell out of you to fill that thing out, what if you end up not filling it out? Do they try and track you down by person or what?
Yeah, they get really aggressive. They'll actually show up at your house.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, they'll actually show up at your house and they'll threaten you. I don't know if anybody's ever been prosecuted. They claim they can.
Well, after I got like three or four of them and they kept after me, I finally did it. So then they were.
Well, and on the one hand, I have an issue with the invasiveness of that, you know, that survey. On the other hand,
real quick, for those who don't know what we're talking about, if you've never got one of these things, it's a census form that has no. If you've never gotten one, let's put it this way, you have no idea what you haven't gotten, because it's got to be 30 pages.
Yeah, and it's
everything, income, it's you name it.
It's insanely invasive.
It has to do with how many doctors you've gone to, blah, you name it. I mean, everything is in there.
Yeah, it's a truly astounding thing. In terms of the depth of the information that it demands from people.
It's not just how many people are living in your house today. It's what about the last year? How many people spent more than a month there? I mean, it's total.
Yeah, it is. It's something else, and it's called the ACS, and it shows up. But that's where the BLS gets their benchmark revision data for the non-institutional population. Okay, that's where it comes from. And so every year in January, that data is corrected, but they don't go back and change, you know, the other 11 months. Okay, it's just that January that it's rebased, essentially. So if you look at the non-institutional population increase and you graph it, it's a sawtooth. And it's a very consistent sawtooth. Okay, and then in January it gets fixed. So the only ones that you look at, if you're actually trying to do any honest analysis in anything related to that, is the January numbers, because they're the only ones that matter. All the rest are a guess, and not a very good one either. You'd think that over time, the BLS would figure out where the inaccuracies are and norm them out of their modeling. I mean, that's what, you know, if you, Chief.
Oh, so what you're saying is all of this, because it's the census and it's a household stuff, all this is the household survey. This is, these revisions has nothing to do with the establishment survey, is what you're saying.
No. What I'm saying is that this is now this survey here, this benchmark revision, if you look at this and you look at the establishment survey, the establishment survey is where you have this breakdown of the different industry sectors.
All right. Well, if I'm looking at
which makes sense, because if you as an employer, You have a SIC code, right? Which is your, you know, the industry sector you're in.
All right. So my monthlies drop off on this table one here. So I'm looking at March of this year, which is where this thing went to, correct? I got to go back to December of 23 or July of 23. But let's just say I go back to July. I go back to July, so I'm losing 3 months. If they yank 800,000 out of here, we're going to be 600,000 people down.
Yeah.
And even in the labor force.
Yeah.
Well, what is changing? I mean, how do you? This is not for us to be critical. If we were doing the job here, when I say doing the job, we are doing the job that we've chosen to do a podcast and do other stuff. But when does all the people in Stocks and Jacks talk here? If you put it all together, you can get one hell of a view of what's going on in the world. So my question to you is, when you hear Nancy saying the last few people that I've done mortgages for, they're working guaranteed 20 hours a week, they might get 30, and that way if they have to come in an extra day, they're still not getting overtime. When are we going to say that, if this happens all over the damn place, now it isn't happening all over the damn place, when are we going to say that if 10 new jobs are created, and we know some are like that, we've really only created 8, because they're all, you know, 75% of the time you're at work. We're still sort of assuming this 40-hour week, and it's getting more and more of a pipe dream by the month, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's what's always astonished me. Is that, you know, you used to do cost accounting, right? I mean, before you were a stock guy.
I was financial accounting. I decided I'll leave that to my bro.
Well, I'll just say, but that's what you used to do, right? Okay. So if you were consistently off in one direction, or even not in one direction, but you're consistently, you're this bleeped up, okay? You'd either fix it or you'd get fired.
Yeah.
Because these kinds of errors screw the company. Because they're making projections and purchasing decisions and, you know, and such based upon the data that you're producing. That's the reason you have a job.
Oh yeah.
That's why you're doing what you're doing. If it's that bad, you'd be out the door if you couldn't figure out what you were doing incorrectly over the previous 12 months and fix it, or at least attenuate it. All right? Now, nobody expects perfection. But realistically speaking, there has to be... I mean, you know, when you look at these benchmark revisions, one of the problems with this is, you know, you look at that right-hand column, the percentage. That's of the whole of the employed people. Well, now, Chief, think about the stupidity of this, okay? What they're trying to argue here is that this is only a 0.5% deviation, therefore it's irrelevant.
I don't know about that. Not if you're talking about increases year over year.
Hello. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this is the kind of justification. Now, take that neg 818 and apply that to the delta over 12 months in the employee instead of the entire number of people employed. Okay, you know, 160 million or whatever it is. I don't have the table up in front of me right now. But you know, out of the entire employed base, it's 0.5%. Out of the delta over the last 12 months, oh my God. Okay, 818 is like a quarter of the whole.
Well, I mean, we're zeroing in on these are household numbers. They're not establishment numbers. How much of it is this birth and death thing? Any?
Birth and death is none of it because birth and death's only in the establishment survey.
Okay.
There is no birth death adjustment in the household.
All right. So if this is going to sound sexist, if the person who answers the phone, which 50 years ago used to normally be the wife, but whoever answers the phone said there's one person working, it doesn't matter whether that person's a contract worker or an employer. You're still working. You're still counted, right?
Working is working.
Working is working. Okay.
Right. So this is, but this is one of those, you know, the whole reason for the birth death adjustment in the establishment survey is that there is a reporting delay, as you know, right? Because until you file the 941s and the 1120s at the end of the year, the data that's in there is incomplete. Because if I set up a business, especially if it's a small outfit and I'm just getting started, those are quarterly filings, right? So, and then, you know, and then of course at the end of the year, you know, the 1120 goes in, but, and that's for a corporation. For LLCs, there's even less detail, but the employment returns come off the quarterly 941s. And so that's part of what they're trying to catch, is that the birth death adjustment is a black box with a knob on it. And like I said, I call it the Bureau of Lies and Scams, because anybody that thinks that there isn't a political impetus to beautify things, no matter who's in office, doesn't make any difference. You're crazy.
Well, there was a year that I don't know how I stumbled upon the actual adjustment, because I can't find any of this stuff anymore. That's why you know, thank God I have somebody like you. But it was either near the end of the Bush administration or the beginning of the Obama administration. We were in kind of a crummy year, whichever it was, and that thing had all kinds of people birthing industries, and I'm going, where are they looking? Not that year.
this is part of the, you know, I mean, there's. And if the errors were not consistently in one direction, if there wasn't a bias, then I would be willing to buy that this was a mistake. The problem is there is a bias.
Where do you think, I have asked, I don't know if I've asked you, but I've badgered other guests, and I probably was badgering because there's no way they would. Where in the bureaucratic mess do you think unusual adjustment, I was going to say lying adjustment, where do you think that takes place? I mean, like I was mentioning to Lou yesterday about, I really don't think that if, matter of fact, you know, we had a caller way back in the day, or actually we have a guest, is it Mike Murphy's mom that actually did some work for CPI, where she actually in the Cleveland area went out and did surveys on some, I don't know if it was rice or noodles or whatever the hell she did, but I mean, I don't think that Mike's mom, if it was her, I don't think she's doing the adjustments herself. I think she's doing the job that she normally does. And now, I don't think it's her boss who sends it on to the, you know, the different kinds of rice and the noodles and the cereal column, and I don't think it's their person's boss. Do you think it gets to the Bureau of Labor, you know, the Secretary of Labor, and he does it, or is it somebody under him, or who takes it upon themselves to say, this rice number is no good, we got to make it cheaper? I mean, where in the bowels of the place Is somebody politically savvy enough to actually make that turn or make the change?
I don't know. Okay. But you know, the BLS is a bureaucracy like so many others, right, within the government. And part of the job of a bureaucracy is to hide the sausage so you can't find the guy that's stuffing the casing. Because if you determine that a particular individual is stuffing the casing with something that's not supposed to be in the sausage, you might take him out and do something evil to him. So this is, you know, this is the same kind of thing that happens in any large organization when there's something that a consumer or customer would consider an unsavory act. You never put a name on that event. Okay, that never happens. And you go to a lot of trouble so people can't, because the ability to do those, to, you know, do the knob twisting relies on nobody being able to identify exactly who dialed the knob.
By the way, I was correct. It was Mike's mom. He texted in. Thank you, Mike.
Oh, okay.
By the way, what a nice lady she was. What a nice
lady.
But yeah,
lady. that's the thing is that you never want to identify the individual that's responsible. It's like, all right, so, you know, we had this what you were talking about in the first hour, you know, we had this mess with Afghanistan, right? Who actually was the responsible party that ditched, however many hundreds of millions of dollars of serviceable military goods and didn't say, okay, go park all those trucks and tanks and rocket launchers and guns and all stuff. Go park it over here in this corner. Oh, by the way, get away from there. And as soon as you do that, hey, guys, you know, you got a couple extra JDAMs. Drop it on that pile.
Okay. <Yeah.
laughs> I mean, somebody made the decision you're going to leave the stuff there anyway. Well, so you spent one JDAM on it who made the decision not to do that?
Well, at Dunkirk, they took the hoses off the engines and let them run until they all welded together.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that people made, there was a human being, a person that made, at least some confluence of these, maybe not every one of the decisions, because, you know, it comes from someone up above, but somebody made the call. A human being made the call. It didn't just organically happen. So, who made the call? I mean, you know, I...
But how many examples of that do we have in our lifetime?
Oh, chief, thousands.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, the big ones, I can name about seven.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a few that you can point at. For example, In current time, just yesterday, I think it was yesterday, it was either yesterday or the day before, the FDA comes out and they now have an updated COVID shot that has the whatever the newest strain is in it, okay? The announcement comes out that it has been approved under emergency authorization, under EUA.
Why?
Well, what emergency?
Yeah, what emergency?
First off, the public health emergency has lapsed. Okay. Secondly, the legal criteria for EUA is defined in actual law. It's not a guessing game. It does not apply by any stretch of the imagination in today for anything. And yet, within the next couple of days, you're going to be able to go to the doctor's office, and if you're stupid enough, get another one of these boosters. And if you do...
Wait a minute, doctors don't do that anymore. You got to go to Walgreens.
Well, wherever, okay? But you're going to have somebody that's, is going to be willing to stab you because your insurance company will pay for it or whatever have you, right?
I think there's a lot of doctors that haven't been shot in 5 years.
Well, and you know what? But where has been the review right? And this is not just, you know, this is not just in the context of COVID. I have raised a big stink about this whole thing with Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative diseases and the plaques and the brain and stuff like this, which has been the focus of basically everything. I've also made a lot of noise about statins and cholesterol and, you know, and all that too.
Hey, sorry to interrupt. That big decision, the court case about the armed forces and their...
Yeah.
Wasn't Lou involved in that? I forgot to ask him yesterday.
I think he was. But here's the thing that's interesting about this. There are still colleges and other entities. And in fact, Kamala Harris's campaign. If you want to work for Kamala Harris, you have to be up to date on your COVID shots.
And it's...
Okay? Now, here's the thing. It is illegal, black letter, in the emergency authorization statute, in the PREP Act and the other things that authorize the issuance of EUAs. It is against the law to either require somebody to use one of those things or to in any way take an adverse action against them for refusing. This is the basis.
That was a court. That was a court thing.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That was the basis upon which, ultimately, when it was all said and done, the whole military thing got blown out. Okay.
Yeah.
But that statute doesn't just apply to the service; it applies to everyone. And yet here we are, and the FDA just issued an EUA authorization for an emergency that's expired.
We don't seem to have, and I'm there's some semblance of, I mean, I don't know what exactly I would want to see in the Oval Office, not what I'm seeing here, but somebody has to be. I don't know. You can't be a micromanager in that position, but you also can't be above the nose either. You know, I don't know how you get that sort of complacency or something. I often think of like the Chicago police, and individually, I don't know where you find a nicer group of people, a better group of people of every color that's in there. And I mean it's a horrible job, it's a great job if you're doing something worthwhile, but it can be horrible at least probably once a day. Now we have, you know, and they collectively I think are not that very well led, and I don't think, but somehow, Carl, if it was you and me, I would say, all right, we've got all these, I'll use these terms, you know, half-assed crimes going on around. You know, somebody burglarizes somebody's car, and somebody does this, somebody, whatever it is. And then you see what they do if a policeman gets shot, which we hope never happens again. And they start talking like they're NCIS or Crime Story, they're using DNA, they're using this, they're using that, and all of a sudden they find somebody. And yet, but I think if I was mayor, I'd say, okay, look, I know we don't have the capability of driving, you know, somebody stealing a car or something. We can't go after all this, like, if it's the only crime around. I said, but do me a favor, and not just a favor, if you want to keep your job. Out of 100 of these that pile up every day, take two of them. Take a random sample of two of them and go after them like a terrier after a bone. Just to give some people the idea that it might just be them. And all of a sudden, there's going to be some guy's fingerprints in a stolen car, which they don't even check now. And all of a sudden, you're going to show up at his house and say, by the way, buddy, you're on parole. Your fingerprints are in this car. You're going
back. Guess what? You're going to jail.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you can't just be above the tone. I mean, if you're listening to the Oval Office, if you listen to Stocks and Jacks, if you're anybody who's, you know, a Franklin Roosevelt or somebody, you're picking up the phone four times during the show saying, and what these guys saying, correct, what are we doing over here? I mean, is any of that go on? I mean, Barack Obama, I think, is a, you know, I think he's probably a really good guy. Is he all worried about playing golf and basketball while he was in there? Is it laziness? It's you don't want to know. But now, Roosevelt was there in his office all day long, seeing people every 20 minutes for how many years? Now, you're not going to find, of course, he couldn't walk. He couldn't play basketball. So, and he couldn't play golf. So, I mean, somewhat were in there. You can't be so divorced away. Yet if you spend all day long as a mayor worrying about somebody getting their car stolen, you can't do your other job either. So there's a sense, and I don't think either one of these people have proven to me yet that they have the sense to stay connected and yet the next day meet with Z or Putin. I don't think there's 20 people on Earth that have that capability, and I don't think either one of these are one of them. It wouldn't be me, probably wouldn't be you, but there's somebody, and if we don't recognize the incredible job that is, and then try and find somebody who's capable of doing it, and it's just a popularity contest, it doesn't mean I'm not disparaging either one of them. They don't want to do a good job, and they're not going to try, or whatever, and they're obviously special people to be running. They're not idiots. I mean, somebody told me how the other day how stupid Kamala Harris. I go, wait a minute. You don't get to be a senator and a vice president by being stupid. They may not have the skill set that you think they need, but stupid is not. My mother wouldn't let me call the guy going down the street, picking stuff out of the alley, stupid.
Right.
I mean, that's not what we got. If you ever call somebody stupid, she'd be running after you. I mean, because whatever somebody is, they know something you don't. I mean, how do we get this national, thing that we want somebody? I was talking to one of my liberal buddies the other night, and I said, I can't, and maybe it's just me, Carl, maybe you can find it. I think that somebody at the level of these two people, I should be able to read something they seriously wrote. I should be able to, maybe some lecture they did. There should be some sort of trail of intellectual curiosity. That there should be a if somebody's coming from the Senate, there should be a bill with his or her name on it that they spent 2 years jamming through committee, and the bill is a work of art between the aisles, and they pulled off something that nobody else. There needs to be some sort of a record of accomplishment. And I don't. When was the last time we had a president that did that?
Well, like never, right? I mean, this is one of the things. in the political context, it's a beauty contest.
Yeah.
Okay. Substantive policy? Well, you got to be joking. Okay. It's part of the reality of the political process is that political promises are a warm bucket of spit. They're unenforceable by anybody. You were talking about the 25th Amendment stuff and that the writers had deliberately left it vague.
Yeah, whatever okay, that they, means. I mean, why would you do that?
Well, and they documented that it was deliberately left vague. Okay, but here's the other side of it. So the 25th Amendment is, in a sense, a form of impeachment. In a sense, right? It's under different grounds, but right. impeachment is
well,
a
if,
political.
If challenged, it becomes an impeachment because the House and Senate
right.
have to vote it. Yeah.
Well, that's right. But the thing is that impeachment is a political process. Okay, and there's there's been quite a decent amount of debate on this. Realize that Trump's first term. Okay, he was impeached twice. Both failed to convict, but he was impeached twice. At least one of those, and arguably both, was later proved not just wrong, but maliciously false.
I don't disagree, and I think the Clinton thing was the same way.
Well, okay. Well, the facts of the Clinton impeachment, what rose to it, getting a Hummer under the desk while on a secure phone call with a prince of Saudi Arabia when the person that's giving it to you doesn't have a clearance.
She was engaged. She wasn't paying attention to the phone call.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, and by the way, that's not illegal because the president can give anyone a clearance whether they're recommended
for
it.
He gave her clearance to go under the desk.
Well, he obviously did. But then again,
how did she fit under the desk? She wasn't a small girl.
Well, I don't know. But,
God, it's a family show.
It
must be a big desk.
There was something going on there. Well, it's probably the Resolute desk. It was nice and large, right?
Yeah.
So, but the other side of that though is that this kind of authority. This is one of the things that scares me about people being complete ideologues when it comes to presidential candidates and the way that, you know, we choose them and then what, you know, who we go out and vote for. I've got serious issues across the board with the last three of these guys that have sat in that office. Biden clearly has violated his fiduciary responsibility to the Presidential Records Act and classification.
Oh yeah.
And you know, with regards to Hunter and other people in his family, Trump gave Kushner a clearance despite a negative recommendation from DISA. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that's and by the way, the reason for it, for the negative recommendation, was concerns about foreign entanglements, which is exactly what the entire investigation process is supposed to be about, right? I mean, that's the whole idea. Is we're not supposed to give somebody a clearance that potentially is going to give our stuff to the Chinese or whoever. But then you just had, just in the last couple days, all of a sudden it blows up all over Fox News about one of the people that Biden has in his national security organization talking about querying our nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And, well, and that we ought to be doing this. Well, has anybody paid attention to the fact that that paper, that what led to that blowing up? That person published a paper in the Journal of Atomic Scientists, which is, they're the guys that run that doomsday clock thing. Okay, you know, it's 5 minutes before midnight. Right. In 2023, over a year ago, on exactly this point. In fact, it is exactly this argument. And nobody paid any attention to it over a year ago. There was no outroar then, you know, no outrage then demanding that this person be ousted. Because, oh, by the way, getting nuked, I think we'd all agree, is bad.
It's a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that would say, oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Let's go ahead and have that happen. But all of a sudden, now that there's an election coming, this is now in the forefront. This kind of that someone incidentally, one of her arguments is that people with foreign entanglements have been essentially discouraged and blocked from seeking and getting security clearances. Oh, really? You mean like that's what we're supposed to be doing?
To me, we're you know, we have a choice here. And who the hell was I talking to? Was Russell, who normally votes for the or was it you? Who votes for the other guy, the third guy, and says he's a buffoon. We can't vote for him, but I mean, we're looking at two people, one of which doesn't seem to have any of the business entanglements that we've been stuck with Pelosi and who was of Schumer and not so much Schumer, the other guy, McConnell, and people like that. She doesn't seem to have any of that. I mean, her money has been basically in passive investments like the spiders or something. She doesn't seem to have any of that crap going on with her. She's been in an administration that is arguably not done a very good job, in my opinion. Seems to be a little weak on economics. Now the question is,
a little
okay,
weak.
I'm saying that if you go that route, you're hoping that she all of a sudden has known all along they haven't done a very good job there. Maybe she's not even on the inner team. Who the hell knows? And now she sees all the mistakes they're making, and she's gonna fix some of those and move onward, because she's probably smarter than Biden was in the first place. I think that there's probably a strong chance. Now, that's the faith on that side. I'm not saying I'm buying it. The other side is, you know, Trump is Trump. He's got all these business entanglements. You don't know how deep his stuff is with Russia, but that was a long time ago. Now, the question is, he screwed up his first time through.
Hang on a minute.
All right, let me finish. I'm saying now the idea is he made mistakes the first time through. He brought in the wrong people, didn't listen to them, got rid of them. Now, he's had a chance to reflect on all that. I don't think he wants to go down as being a total buffoon. He wants to make good. Maybe he wants to keep himself out of jail, but I'm going to say he wants to make good with another term. Now, we're actually making the bet on either one of the people growing in the job and changing. And to me, that's a tough bet. And I don't know how you pick. I read something a while ago with John F. Kennedy. Now, granted, the guy, he had problems with keeping his zipper zipped to a huge extent. He had a bad back. He could barely walk, and still he managed to find somebody new to have sex with every day. but this guy, evidently there are a bunch of tapes, and this guy remastered a lot of the tapes for meetings in the Oval Office and said,
right.
And so when the guy was sitting there, it didn't matter whether it was the oil companies, the utility companies, whatever it was, the dude was so prepared that 5 minutes into the conversation, you could tell he knew more about their businesses than they did and was the smartest man in the room. And I don't know that we've had anybody since then, maybe Tricky Dick, that had that kind of mentality.
No, well, we haven't, and you know, I mean, but that's the nature of politics becoming a beauty contest, which is, you know, to a large degree, what happens when the media gets involved in anything, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it was, but then again, the nastiness of that sort of thing is nothing new. Okay, look at all the newspaper articles and such, you know, from around the, you know, the early 1900s, the robber barons and all of this, right? So my biggest concern in the present tense is that we have a fiscal policy disaster.
Yeah.
That both parties have been all in on, okay, because by God, they want to see that green number at the end of the day in the Dow Jones. And, you know, in the NASDAQ and Adobe and, you know, in Netflix and whatever. That is the salient factor for them. Okay.
Well, Trump put that on the every day. He would say the market was up because of him. I mean, he brought it right to the.
Yeah, but not only Trump. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying he vocalized. But I'm sure the other people feel the same way.
Okay, and I can go and I can take a look, you know, and Paulson said that we'd be rolling tanks down the street shooting at people if he didn't get a $700 billion blank check,
yeah.
Right? Which, by the way, today is Trump is chump change compared to the garbage that comes out of.
Well, because because the dollar in your pocket is chump dollar.
Well, that's right. So how many times do you get to do that before you run out of rope on it and you come up short and, oh, by the way, you're rappelling down the cliff and you're out of rope, but there's 100 feet of cliff left? This is the seminal issue, is that everyone looks for a way to shift this off somewhere, right? American corporations have been doing it for the last, you know, 2-3 decades. Everything goes overseas. We were sold this whole thing with NAFTA. You've got people on social media and elsewhere. I just got into it a couple of days ago with a guy who was lamenting that young women don't want to have children. Okay,
kids are kind of a pain in the ass.
Well, okay, but his pinned comment on his profile. Pinned now, so this is what the guy thinks is the most important thing that somebody reads about him. His pinned comment was lauding the fact that what he does for companies, small and I'm assuming mostly small, because larger ones know how to do this, don't need his help, is offshoring their labor to the Philippines for $5 an hour.
Yeah, well.
And then he wonders why young women look at that and say, but my kid's job is going to pay a maximum of $5 an hour. And, oh, by the way, since that's less than the minimum wage, the actual wage that kid will get is zero.
Well, the whole idea was, the economic idea, which I think has been debunked now, maybe because it's of the rise in population in those places. You never get to the point where their labor gets any power. Maybe that's the problem or the issue, but... I had my phone carrier. I'm using, I don't know who I'm using now, but the guys before them, they were one of these, you know, what do you call it, like a secondary? They buy the bandwidth at Verizon or something.
They're like a consumer cellular
or Walmart or something like that.
Basically brokers.
Yeah, well, when Walmart does it, and Best Buy, I mean, you know, well, this one, this company was, their shtick was, they always had people here, and if you called, you had a problem. You got somebody in the U.S., and I can't remember the name of it. And all of a sudden, one day, I had some problem. My phone was out, and I called them, and all of a sudden, I could tell right away the person is not from here. And the guy didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Matter of fact, I actually was trying to buy another phone, and I absolutely could not complete the transaction with the guy on the phone. I couldn't understand him. He couldn't understand me. We had a great time. And so I called back, same thing. Finally, I said, where the hell are you? And he goes, well, I'm in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And I said, I thought everybody was supposed to be here. Oh, no, they moved everybody offshore. The difference in, I don't even know if they're still in business. But
well, that's, yeah, I mean, but then again, you know, the level of, I mean, that's the undercurrent under, you know, under the idea that, well, we can just all make it okay if we just increase M2 and we, you know, we keep the velocity up. And, oh, by the way, that means that, you know, the price of houses goes up, the price of stocks goes up, because we've taken parts of the cost structure out of the American business. You know, so we have you have the illegal Mexicans roofing the house, right? Well, it's not just that they're willing to work when it's 90 degrees out in the middle of August. And, you know, the Americans would be, you want me to do what?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just that. It's also that they're illegal, therefore they're not making prevailing wage, okay, even minimum wage. And by the way, they're also not having Social Security and other employment taxes taken out. They're probably not even having federal income tax taken out. Maybe they are, maybe they're not, because maybe they stole someone's identity. Or maybe the guy just looks the other way and doesn't care. But the reality of it is that then you say, well, but that you'd think that what that would cause is that, okay, if I paid Americans to roof that house, that labor would be, say, $4,000. Okay? The Mexicans did it for two, right?
You see, so
you'd think the house would be $2,000 cheaper, but that's not what happens.
I'm going to say, Carl, that has been the history of all that. Now, I happen to, you know, I talk to everybody, right? I mean, it's, I'll admit that, and to the fault line, and I'm going to say I know a lot of Hispanic people. I do a lot of work at my place. Everybody's a citizen, by the way. But you know what? Even the ones that have been here a long time and maybe have just gotten their citizen, the idea that these places are paying these people nothing anymore, that's not happening. You know, I mean,
it's not.
I mean, one of the guy's kids works for one of these landscaping companies.
Chief, it's
and,
not
and
just
I'm thinking he's $30 an hour?
It's not just that, but here's, okay, so you're in a high cost area in Chicago, okay? It is not just the hourly rate. It's all the compliance costs that they're not dealing with.
I think what the COVID here had a pretty interesting change in the world, especially in the, how can I say, the world of mostly Hispanic, but people that work like in restaurants, not the chefs, the other people.
Right.
When the COVID happened, everybody got tossed out, and people started doing a lot of other stuff. A lot of those people found a job making two and three times they're making in the restaurant, and that's the reason why they didn't come back.
Right.
I'm saying it's not. I don't know that you can go out now, and you could probably go to the Home Depot where some of the people, the current people here, you know, you could probably grab three of those guys if you had, you know, some yard you hadn't cleaned up in 20 years, and you probably grab some of those guys and give them $50 for the day.
Oh yeah,
maybe. But if you actually want somebody decent to show up every day, you're paying a lot more. That whole idea of find yourself a Mexican guy and work for a dollar an hour, that ship has sailed a long time ago here.
Well, yeah, but there is still the thing is.
Thankfully, ship sailed. By the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. However, there is a difference in compliance costs, and it's not small.
I don't know that any of these guys aren't getting. They're surely getting a 1099, where they're paying.
Well, some of it is. But the basic problem you have is how are you funding all these, you know, 20 million. Undocumented people in the United States right now, maybe more, and half of that over the last 3.5 years.
Yeah, you know, I don't get out of my hood. What can I tell you? I'm saying, in Chicago, virtually everybody that used to be, I mean, there were big time restaurants in Chicago way back. Remember the place that Michael Jordan owned, not when he owned it. It used to be Ireland's, and then it became Jordan's, and it's up on LaSalle Street. Big, huge restaurant. The illegals lived upstairs. You'd see with the windows open. I mean, you don't see that anymore. I mean, at least I don't. I mean,
well, no, because now it's now their housing is all being subsidized. I mean, you go look at New York.
I'm just saying. I guess my question I want to get to you though is, you know, we got 10 minutes. Is whoever gets to be president in the last, I'm going to say the last however many presidents going all the way back to Carter, really had a screw up in their bureaucracy that kind of ruined their presidency. I mean, I'm going to say 9/11. I'm going to give Bush a break and say he had all kinds of stuff he wanted to do. He wasn't able to do any of it because he always is. You know, should he, I have a belief, I mean, I didn't think he was the brightest president we ever had, but I have a feeling that if somebody would have dropped a report on his desk saying, hey, there's a bunch of guys taking flying lessons, they look like they're from the Middle East, they don't seem to care if they land, I believe he's going to say, what the bleep is this?
Well, all right. So,
I mean, I don't think he was that inattentive, and I don't think he was that dumb. I have a feeling.
I was going to say, oh, by the way, that phone call was made.
well, but I'm saying, I don't. One of the guys, I happen to know more about this than I should, because there was one of the guys at Pullman was a helicopter engineer. And when the thing happened in Iran with Jimmy Carter, when they went to get the hostages and everybody blamed it all on Carter, first of all, very few people realized there was no SEAL Team 6 back then. There were no SEALs back then. There might have been there was no forces. Everything was all, you had to put a few from this group together, Army, Navy. It was all balled up. By the way, the helicopter they used, he goes, I can't believe they used that helicopter. Everybody's known forever to think can't run on the sand. And that, some generals.
Not only that, they got nailed with bad weather, which is not their fault.
No, but he said that was the helicopter that some generals attached their basically behind to. The thing was never any good.
Right.
And that's the one they used. He goes, that, for God's sake, you could have used an old Huey. They're you know, they can handle that stuff. That thing that he told me that the rotor, I think he said every 300 hours you had to replace it. It was $100,000 back then.
Oh well, you know, but chief, somebody in someone's district is making that rotor.
I know, but I'm saying he didn't do that. Trump didn't cause COVID, although, but his bureaucracy failed him by sending the money over there, screwing it up, and failed him all the way through. I mean. He didn't deserve that.
Well, now wait a minute.
He had no idea that crap was going through North Carolina and those other places.
Okay.
I don't think he did.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. I am going to hold him personally responsible for this because even though, as you're well aware, I have no love lost for Obama at all. Obama, by executive order, blocked all foreign high-impact investigation of viral BS. Okay.
Oh, he did that. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes, he did. And Trump lifted the order.
Why?
I'm sure the argument was we need to be prepared for the possibility that, you know, that some natural bad thing will happen and we have to do this research.
Well,
which, by the way, was the argument that was made to Obama, and Obama said, well, that may very well be true that this kind of a thing could happen naturally. However, what you're doing is dangerous and go to hell.
All right, when I ask these questions, I'm not trying to be stupid, although sometimes it, not stupid, dumb. When Trump or Obama does something like that, now Trump wanted to reverse a lot of executive orders just sort of on principle.
Right.
Now, did he get, he doesn't seem to have, and again, I don't know, he doesn't seem to have the Harry Truman type of attention span, shall we say. Now, when this happens, does somebody put, here's 25 executive orders that we don't like so much from Obama, and he just grabs the bottom page. I guess I'm trying to ask the question without being an ass here. Does he read that one? Does he even know what would gaining, because there'll be a lot of them that came by me that I wouldn't know what the hell they were. I mean, I'm not disparaging. I'm saying, but does he read all 25 or 100 or 200 of them and say, all right, explain this one to me? Did Obama even read it in the first place, or did somebody say, "Hey, this crap's a bad idea. You got to sign this"? I don't know.
Well, Chief, everybody, you know, look, every executive. You know, I was the CEO of a, you know, a small but decent sized company, right? I had people that came into my office all the time that were, they were in sales, or in the marketing area, or the tech support area, or whatever have you. You know, one of my trusted higher level folks came in and said, "Hey, you know, I need this, and by the way, you have to approve it because, you know, I can't spend that money."
Okay? Yeah.
And they'd say, you know, "Here it is," and stick it on the desk in front of me. It's still my job to look at that and say, "Yeah, okay," or, "What are you, out of your effing mind?" All right. So, I mean, this is that's the job. And this is one of the things that's maddening to me is that, you know, now Harris wants to run around and say, "Well, you know, she wasn't really the border czar." Well, in fact, Biden, his administration, actually labeled her as the
border czar. Labeled it to her, but she could she have come back with a 30-page plan and have those guys do it? Probably not.
Well, now wait a minute. She made the decision, having been delegated that authority, that where she was going to attempt to go with this, instead of working from the bottom up, in other words, we've got all these people coming in, fine, you stop that, and that puts back pressure on the channel, including all the way through Mexico into the source nations where these people are coming from, because Mexico doesn't want to end up with 2 million of these clowns in their country with no way to work, no way to make a living, and by the way, they'll presumably become thugs because you got to eat. So you put the pressure on from the backside. No, she decided that what she was going to do is try to get places like El Salvador to stop sending the people.
Okay. Well, that would be a thought. Stay home.
Well, that's a nice idea. Yeah. However, number one, it failed. It didn't work. Okay, as evidenced by the facts.
Now, the question is, did we stop sending money to El Salvador? Probably not.
Probably not, right? By the way, one of the elements of this would be if you got people that are coming, there's a difference between refugees and economic migration. Okay, they're two different things. They're subject to, and this is part of the problem, is that we have within our legal code there is a distinction. A person who is legitimately a refugee has a priority level that is quite substantial, and in within our Immigration Naturalization Act you can't call them rights, but there are presumptions that attach to that status. Economic migration has no protection whatsoever. At all. All right. So you have.
Seems like they can be pretty dovetailed together.
Well, you have NGOs that are funded by groups within the United States. All right. By the way, one of the biggest ones, last numbers I saw was something on an order of $700 million.
Yeah, they're big. It's big business.
Catholic Charities.
Yeah.
Okay. And they have people that advise all of these people to claim, "Well, you know, I'm here because of political persecution." No, you're not. You're here because you couldn't get a job.
Well, on Tuesday, why don't we talk a little bit about the dovetailing between all the stuff that's going on in these countries and the people that are in charge. Maybe aren't the people we want to see in charge, yet whenever we give any kind of money to the place, they end up with some of the money, and they end up even being stronger. So, I don't know how you stop that. I mean, the reason why I'll save this to Tuesday, but one of, he wasn't a terrific friend, but he lived next door, a guy named Mario Cardinal at Notre Dame. It was freshman year, and then he moved off campus. I kind of lost track of him, but his parents were under distress in, I believe it was Nicaragua, and that was 1970. I think his family's still under distress. I mean, you could never say the guy wasn't some sort of a refugee. For God's sake, it was horrible down there for the whole family. They're always worried they're going to show up and get shot.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is, you know.
And how much money have we given to Nicaragua in the last 40 years?
Okay, well, Chief, you know what? You can be as sympathetic to the human condition in various parts of the world as you'd like. The fact is that there's 9 billion people in the world.
Well, I'm saying I think roughly. We make it worse because we end up propping these people up.
Well, we do, okay. But regardless of all of that, something on neighborhood of 20% of the population of the planet has a income level less than the average Mexican. Okay,
well,
Mexico's
five bucks a day costs to eat in most of the world, and most people don't have it.
And most people don't have it. That's right. We have 330 million people here. If you tried to actually assist even 2% of those, you destroy America's ability to provide for everyone, including all of us who are already here.
Yeah, that's second. It's a problem.
Second, well, yes, and secondly, and much worse, if those people are, if this problem's ever going to get solved, it needs to be solved there.
I don't disagree.
Last thing, well, and the last thing you want to do is siphon off the handful of people with 110 IQs from somewhere like Nicaragua. Bring them into the United States, because now Nicaragua doesn't have
well,
that.
Well, I mean, we could have told the Irish, you have less Irish, and the potatoes famine really didn't exist, but S&P futures up 33, 34, and NASDAQ futures up 179. Powell better give a pretty good speech today. We're almost back to where we were down yesterday. Is he going to be good for the full U-turn, Carl, you think, or no?
Boy, I'll tell you, I don't know. What I am seeing, though, is that despite the monetary pumping that has continued, right. I mean, you can look at the M2 data. It is what it is, right? On the ground, I'm seeing, just among the people I know, massive contraction in freight movements,
I'm with you. Let's kick that up on Tuesday. I'll try and get some of that stuff in you as well.
The heroin's not working anymore.
No, well, today it's...
Well, today it's working.
Today's working, yeah. Today's it working. We'll be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.